happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I welcome you. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream channel and searching for Gary Null. And, of course, people are listening over their telephones. We're the number one program in the world. Of all more than 10,000 stations, people are actually listening. Cars, any place they have a portable device, trucks, cabs, they just dial a number. And here is the number. 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, noon Eastern Standard Time to 1, and Tuesday evenings for the Progressive Commentary Hour from 7 to 8. Please write this down, 701-801-3662, 701-801-3662. Now today, we're going to talk about how different foods that we take for granted, we may like to eat them, but we never really ask, what will this do for us? Well, I'm going to just take a couple examples. Like, we're going to get a deeper insight into oats, because oats can do a lot of good for the fats in our body. And also the consumption of a bioactive compound from the neem, many people have used neem, N-E-E-M, could significantly suppress the development of prostate cancer. And that's from the National University of Singapore. We're also going to look at how you literally can work yourself to death. Now, the Japanese actually have a term for working yourself to death. We don't, but we still work ourselves to death. Indiana University research. And also, for those of you who are over the age of 40, and you're starting to age prematurely, there's one nutrient, it's actually a part of a larger nutrient, the omega-3 fatty acids, but the DHA fraction of that can help you as you age by helping to prevent cognitive impairment. And there's a lot more on health and healing. My commentary today, there's two. One from Chris Hedges from TruthDig, American Irrationalism. And also, I've been speaking on our local non-commercial station where I've been for 40 years on WBAI in New York. And it historically was the only major radio station, nonprofit station, to be a voice for the voiceless and some of the most progressive voices in American history. And of the last 5 years, I've done an increasing number of programs on how behind the scenes, behind the people that we know, are the people we do not know. And I use the term the deep state and the invisible hand, representing people who don't want you to know how much power they have, but these are the people who select the politicians, they select the people to run their foundations, their think tanks, to head their media empires, and in effect, create the foreign and domestic policies by which we're all impacted. And I've been doing a series to help the station raise funds called The Deep State. But I also did a series called The Invisible Hand, and another series called The Wealth Masters, and another series of 10 one-hour specials called Fascism, Inc., and another series called Police State USA. So, interesting that for a long time, people just didn't believe anything like this occurred, including on the left. Well, I'm going to read you a commentary today from John Pilger, who is, in my opinion, one of the most brilliant journalists in the history of journalism. And he's been a journalist for, I bet, around 50 years. And He has written an article for Countercurrents called Inside the Invisible Government, War Propaganda, Clinton and Trump. I thought you'd like to hear some of that to show that those of us who've been doing our homework, we're not alone. There's a lot of people who now see that we do have two governments, the ones we elect or are aware of, and the one behind the scenes we're not. And the second one has the power. So also today, I'm going to share a few thoughts for my friend Michael Moore, who I wrote an open letter to, and I'm merely encouraging Michael, since he keeps doubling down on attacking Trump. He can attack Trump all he wants. That's fine. But then he praises Hillary as the savior. I saw him now twice in the last week. I'd like for him and those who support that kind of thinking that, okay, Hillary is the best at what? So I'm going to offer you a couple insights into how her mind works. Today, for example, we're going to show you that she fixed the election, rigged it, actually rigged it. And you're going to hear in her own words say this, how you, and in WikiLeaks now shows it before she even ran for president, she had already selected her vice president candidate. Why would she do that? And how they did it and who they were working with. Plus, even in meddling in other people's politics in other countries, including in Israel's and the Palestinian, she believed that that election should also be rigged. Now, this isn't specious or speculative statements. You'll hear it in her own words. Today, you're going to hear from Jill Stein. And she believes that Bernie Sanders supporters should unite behind her campaign. She says, quote, if you have to lose an election in order to establish your power, you have to do that. I fully agree with that. And I'm also going to have on today as a guest, live on the air, David Cobb. Now, many of you may not know David. He is an attorney. He's an activist attorney. He is the campaign manager for Dr. Jill Stein in the Green Party. But in 2004, he was the Green Party presidential candidate. And he also co-founded Move to Amend, a political organization seeking to curtail corporate power and end corporate personhood via a constitutional amendment. He has a law degree, he is also on the board of the Green Institute. So we're going to hear from him, and I'm going to challenge him on how progressive is Jill Stein in the Green Party. And if you've ever heard me challenge any of these people, Gary Johnson, others, Ron Paul, I give them very little choice. They can say yes or no. No ability to explain after that. You'll see why. So you see, we have a packed show today. It's one of those hours I wished I had two. But let's get on. We now have some research from St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto that there's two additional markers that better assess your cardiovascular health and your risk of having a heart attack or stroke. And while the impact of oats, and I prefer steel-cut oatmeal, much richer in oat beta-glucan, and these are known to impact overall cholesterol, but now it's shown that it really lowers your bad LDL cholesterol and your very bad low-density lipoprotein, which is good. And it's also impacts your good HDL cholesterol, plus your total cholesterol. So that means that if you want to have a better blood sugar, if you want to have a better blood cholesterol, if you want to have a healthier gut, if you want to establish good fibers that affect your microflora in the gut, if you want to decrease constipation, increase your food transit time through your intestines, which makes it healthier, then you couldn't get better than steel-cut oatmeal. And you're getting that great beta-glucan, which is terrific for our health. So that's good. Now, when I'm counseling people, sometimes I'm suggesting things that are not easy to find. They may have to go to a special pharmacy, may have to go to Chinatown, they may have to go to an Ayurvedic specialist. But neem's one of those products that's not easy to find. But if here's why you should know it's important. This is from the National University of Singapore. This is from a team of researchers by Professor Sethe from the Department of Pharmacology at the Yong Lo Lin School of Medicine at the National University. They found that there's a bioactive terpenoid, which is the active compound in neem, which is a plant, that can reduce the size of prostate tumors by up to 70%, and, more importantly, suppress its spread or metastasis by 50%. Now, there's no drug, there's no natural ingredient that can do that. So this is really important. So please write this down. This was in a 12-week study where they reduced the size of tumors by 70% and decreased the tumor metastasis by 50%. So we're talking about something that could save the lives of a lot of people. And it's neem, N-E-E-M, from the neem plant, which is used for other things. Quote, here's what it says. Although the diverse anti-cancer effects of nemabolide have been, that's an active ingredient, have been reported in different cancer types, its potential effects on prostate cancer initiation and progression have not been demonstrated in scientific studies. In this research, we have demonstrated that the nemabolide can inhibit tumor cell viability, a cellular process that directly affects the ability of a cell to proliferate, grow, divide, or repair damaged cell components, and induce programmed cell death in prostate cancer cells, end quote. And that was from the Professor Sethi, S-E-T-H-I. So that's good news, and it's been known for a long time. The neem belongs to the mahogany tree family, and it was originally native to India and the Indian subcontinent. It's very common in traditional Asian medicine, generally used for, let's say, your immune system, but in this case, cancer. Now, there's this whole concept of work and working yourself to death. Here's what Indiana University has to say about this. Previous academic research has found that having greater control over your job could help you manage work-related stress, but it's never suggested it was a matter of life and death until now. New research from the Indiana University Kelly School of Business finds that those in high-stress jobs with little control over their workflow die younger or are less healthy than those who have more flexibility and discretion in their jobs and are able to set their own goals as part of their employment. And they looked at 2,363 Wisconsin residents and went over a 7-year period. So here's the takeaway message. The paper is called Work to Death, the Relationships of Job Demands and Job Control with Mortality. It was published in the journal Personal Psychology. And it means this, that if you're working at a job where you have little say-so, you're a cog in the wheel, you might be in a place where you may not like the job, you may find better ways of doing it, but you're not allowed to explore those, and you're doing it in a repetition. Also, jobs that are highly repetitive with no creativity stress the person as well. So, isn't it time that we put the value and quality of our life ahead of our jobs? And think of all the jobs you could do. I'll give you one example of this, and this is not the only example. I had a friend, an attorney, who was a very successful attorney. He worked at a firm that was one of the biggest representatives of the wine industry. And he wasn't in a policymaking position, but he was doing the same work over and over, year in, year out. It provided him with a comfortable lifestyle. And one day, we're training for the New York City Marathon. And he said, Gary, he said, I'm so bored to death, but I'm also stressed because I've got to have this quota system. And, you know, in law, it's about your billing hours. And I don't want to get to that position where I compromise my integrity by having to bill for hours I really didn't work just so that I can show that I'm deserving of being paid my salary. And I said, well, what would you love to do if you could do anything? He said, I love animals. Love animals. And I said, well, then why don't you go someplace where you can be around animals, like a nature preserve or that has a animal sanctuary. We have a lot of nice animal sanctuaries in America. And in fact, a lot of the animals that I rescue and bring them back to health, I then give them, I put 56 horses in one 2,800 acre, that's a huge space, up in Canada. And there's people that need to work there. So look around. They're upstate New York. They're all over. And he did. And about a year went by, and I didn't see him. And when I did, he was like a different person. He had lost weight. His blood pressure come down. He could sleep through the night. He no longer had upset stomach after a meal because he was internalizing his stress in his stomach and his digestive tract, as a lot of people do. So think about the importance of your life. So that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. I'm Gary Noll in our New York studios. I'm just finishing up in the next 4 weeks a new film on the environment. My hope is to make it the most clear-cut message for what's going on in our environment with all the other films that are out there, including Leonardo DiCaprio's good film. Just watched it. But mine's a completely different one. I'm looking at all the tipping points and putting them all together to show you what happens. So then the question is, will it make a difference? Will the truth actually move people to get out of their comfort zone and commit themselves to being a part of this movement? Because we've got three ways of handling this. We have the individual way. We can have the corporate way. And there are some very progressive corporations that are looking for ways of helping us create products or services that don't pollute to the environment, actually contribute to renewables. And then there are corporate ones that don't want any of this to happen because they don't want to spend the money cleaning up the mess they've made. And then you have the government. And that is your least effective and most politicized group that we're dealing with. So there are some questions. And there is no shortage of signs of impending environmental catastrophe, including the melting of the polar ice caps and the rise of atmospheric carbon to above 400 parts per million. The Earth's sixth max extinction is now underway. Now, it's not taking place because of planetary forces. Homo sapiens is orchestrating it. Americans are at the same time bankrupting themselves by waging endless and unwinnable wars. And we have allowed our elites to push more than half of the U.S. population into poverty through deindustrialization. We do nothing to halt the waves of nihilistic violence by enraged citizens who carry out periodic mass shootings in schools, malls, movie theaters, and other public places. And the political and financial elites flaunt their greed and corruption. Donald Trump appears to pay no federal income taxes. Hillary and Bill Clinton use their foundation as a tool for legalized bribery. Our largest corporations have orchestrated a legal tax boycott. The judicial system is a subsidiary of the corporate state. Militarized police conduct public executions of unarmed people of color. Our infrastructure, including our schools and roads and bridges, along with our deindustrialized cities, are in ruins. Decay and rot, and physical and moral, are pervasive. We are blinded to our depressing reality by the avalanche of images disseminated by mass media. Political, intellectual, and cultural discourse has been replaced with spectacle. Emotionalism and sensationalism are prized over truth. Highly paid pundits who parrot back the official narrative of corporate advertisers and inane talk shows and violent or sexually explicit entertainment and gossip-fueled news have contaminated cultural life. Reality television is contrived, as every other form of mass entertainment has produced a reality presidential candidate. Mass culture, because it speaks to us in easily digestible cliches and stereotypes, reinforces ignorance and bigotry and racism. It promotes our individual and collective self-glorification. It sanctifies non-existent national virtues. It takes from us the intellectual and linguistic tools needed to separate illusion from truth. It is all show business all the time. There are hundreds of millions of Americans who know that something is terribly wrong. A light has gone out. They see this in their own suffering and hopelessness, and the suffering and hopelessness of others. But they lack, because of the contamination of our political, cultural, and intellectual discourse, the words and ideas to make sense of what is happening around them. They are bereft of a vision. Austerity, globalization, unfettered capitalism, an expansion of the extraction of fossil fuels, and war are not the prices to be paid for progress and the advance of civilization. They are part of the savage and deadly exploitation by corporate capitalism and imperialism. They serve a neoliberal ideology. The elites dare not speak this truth. It is toxic. They peddle the seductive illusions that saturate the airwaves. We are left to strike out at shadows. We are led to succumb to the racism, allure of white supremacy and bigotry that always accompanies a culture in dissolution. We cannot, for this reason, discount the possibility that Trump will be elected president. The election outcome will be decided by whatever emotion Americans feel when they cast their ballots. Celebrity narratives, manufactured pseudo-drama, sex scandals, natural disasters, insults and invective, mass shootings and war flash before us in a constant jumble of images on ubiquitous screens. The sensory assault obliterates reality. A former congressman who sends a picture of himself in underwear to a woman in a national news story? Well, look at that. Sober examinations of our economic, foreign, judicial, and environmental policies are simply dismissed as too complicated and too boring. They do not produce engaging images. A man in his underwear does. The electronic media's sole goal is to attract viewers and advertising dollars. It has conditioned us to demand a nonstop vaudeville act. Because of this mass indoctrination, we have become infected with what Daniel Boorstin says is that social narcissism, the bottomless narcissism of Trump and the Clintons, caters to this social narcissism. They reflect back to us our desperate longing for as well as celebration of entertainment, celebrity wealth, power, self-aggrandizement. It is not only advertising and public relations that carry out the incessant manufacturing of illusion that feeds social narcissism. Journalists, book publishers, politicians, athletes, entertainers, positive psychologists, self-help gurus, the Christian right, and talk show hosts all feed the mania for illusion. They all chant the insane mantra that reality is never an impediment to what we desire. We can have anything we want if we work hard, get an education, believe in ourselves, grasp that we are exceptional, and see the impossible as always possible. It is magical thinking, and magical thinking is the only real commodity the elites have left to offer us. Yep, make America great again, or American already is great, take your pick of idiot cliches. And thank you, Chris Hedges, for your insights. Now, before we go to our guest, I promised you I would be sharing some insights that I believe are important because behind the Clintons is a vast group of people all interconnected in foundations, think tanks, and over 200,000 corporations that feed at the corporate troughs. These are the war machine profiteers. These are the people that, like Halliburton, that will charge $100 to wash what should be 50 cents for a duffel bag of clothes. All of these people are in line to support Clinton, all of them. Every single war profiteer, all the neocons, because they know that Clinton will make sure that everything stays the same, but also gets worse. Because the worse it gets, with posturing with war, using NATO against Russia, by continuing to harass China, by encouraging Israel to invade Iran, by going into a no-fly zone in Syria, then it can only get worse for everyone involved except for those who are there on the inside. This unelected group, this secret society, you don't know their names, but they know Clinton's name. And this is what Michael Moore is supporting. So when the wars happen, and when nothing has been done to change the environmental impact of our lives because of all the people who are owed favors, don't confuse what a politician will promise you when they're trying to get elected versus what they deliver when they are elected. If you want good examples of that, just look at Bill Clinton promising the poor and the black that he would help them. Yeah, he did. Into a prison cell and no relief, and out of welfare when they needed it and no relief. I've yet to see that being addressed in any of the national media, where the poor women of the Middle East who are victims of the neoliberal campaign started back with Clinton, Bush Sr., and then Clinton followed through, and Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State has promoted that. So then you have to ask yourself, what is a life worth? Well, I guess it's which life, whose life are you talking about? If you're talking about people of color in another country, it's worth nothing because the media will not condemn you, as it has not, for your bad choices. They'll simply say, well, let's put that behind us and go on. Could you imagine after the genocide that occurred under Stalin and under Mao and under so many others that all historians said, let's just put that aside and start from today? What if you're a victim? What if your family were victims? Could you imagine that after the Second World War, the Nazis said, well, now we're no longer Nazis, we're good Germans, and we're being rebuilt, so let's just put all this behind us. Then how would we learn the lessons? How would we prevent future atrocities and genocides? So right now, we have a group of people in power who are guaranteeing each other that none of them will be held accountable as long as Hillary Clinton is the president. Jill Stein has a different position. Let's hear from Jill Stein a short piece on why it's not about electing the worst of two evils. We still have a positive solution.
That the American public is leading the charge. They are the ones who are rejecting these candidates and these political parties, saying that the two candidates we have now are the most untrustworthy, the most disliked, and who are the pundits to tell them, to tell the American people who are being thrown under the bus, be good little boys and girls. Just support these candidates of the political establishment to do more of their damage. Remember, you do not defeat neo-fascism through neoliberalism. Neoliberalism will create more neo-fascism. We have the potential not to split the vote, but to flip the vote, because there are 42 million young people who have no way forward, who are trapped in predatory student loan debt, about which Democrats have had nothing to offer any more than Republicans. By simply getting the word out that they can come out, that is a plurality of the vote, They can come out and actually win this election, and not only win it to cancel student debt like we did for the friggin' bankers, the crooks on Wall Street. We can cancel that debt, make higher education free, end police violence. These are all eminently solvable problems. The Democrats, even when they had two Democratic houses of Congress, what did they do? They bailed out Wall Street. You know, they enacted all of the above, which has been basically drill, baby, drill on steroids. Hillary Clinton's finger on the button is as dangerous as, certainly as dangerous as Donald Trump, and it's Barack Obama himself who initiated the new nuclear arms race, spending $1 trillion. We should not rest easy with either candidate. This is a time for us to stand up. In the words of Alice Walker, biggest way people give up power is by not knowing we have it to start with. My campaign has been supported, actively supported, by many of the leaders in the African American community, like Mark Lamont Hill and like Cornel West, who say that their community cannot afford to sit back and let themselves be thrown under the bus. We must establish our own power. If you have to lose an election in order to establish your power, you have to do that. But simply by allowing Hillary Clinton and the Democrats to pretend to be saving us is absolutely the wrong thing to do.
I agree with that. Now, let's hear about two things on Hillary Clinton. How Hillary Clinton proposed rigging Palestinian elections.
Have troubled me deeply. I do not think we should have pushed for an election in the Palestinian territories. I think that was a big mistake. And if we were going to push for an election, then we should have made sure that we did something to determine who was going to win.
Okay. Let me put that in a larger context for you so you understand what she was saying.
What appears to be, or flat out is, coordination between the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee before Hillary Clinton even announced that she was running for president. Remember, the White House in December of 2014 and the Democratic National Committee insisted they were neutral in this entire race. We learned later that wasn't true. Now we're getting even more evidence. An email between Robbie Mook and Cheryl Mills. These are obviously two very senior aides to Hillary Clinton. December 2014, quote, I will definitely have a conversation with her once Seamus, David Seamus, the political director at the White House, gets DWS, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and Amy, her chief of staff, aligned. That word, aligned. I also want to get her help on Iowa planning next week. Planning about the Iowa caucuses in December of 2014, the Clinton camp working with the Democratic National Committee and the White House. And this suggests they rigged this long before Hillary Clinton even announced. And it draws the White House in because Seamus, David Seamus, is mentioned throughout this email exchange. And so the White House keeps saying, you know, and has said for months and more than a year that they were neutral in the race. They were working with Hillary Clinton's camp. The context here is they were working on hiring someone to focus on general election planning efforts. Fine, the White House wants a Democrat to be elected in the general election. We get that. The White House, the DNC, were working with the Clinton campaign. This is now revealed for all the world to see.
Just remember, I played two different clips. One is to show you that before she told the public she was running for president, she had already arranged that the Democratic National Committee and Debbie Wasserman Schultz would be supporting her. That meant that an organization that's supposed to be neutral wasn't. So all the people who were wondering, why is this going the way it is against Bernie Sanders? Why does Bernie Sanders have 20,000 people show up and Hillary Clinton's got, you know, 400? And yet the news is all about her. Why is it that he clearly won some debates, but it doesn't show on CNN? Because it also shows that in these WikiLeaks, there were more than 66 members of the media, including all the dancing clowns at MSNBC, and the embarrassment of reporting over on CNN, that they were already in her pocket. They were in her camp. That's what I'm saying, that you have to understand that all this is coordinated. This is not by accident. Had it not been for WikiLeaks, then we wouldn't have known this. But now we do. And yet people live in denial. Well, someone's that cunning that they don't want a democratically elected Palestinian government. They don't want them to have that. They want to be able to control the outcome. As she just said, you heard her say in her own words, got to control the outcome. Well, you're not a part of that. You have no right to be controlling it. If you want to vote for it, fine. But you're telling people that they should try, in Israel, they should try to control the outcome of that. And that's what is always being done, working behind the scenes, always with plausible deniability, until they get caught. So then the question is, when they finally get caught and you see that they've been orchestrating these campaigns, then at what point do you realize what kind of sociopathic people you're dealing with? And to continue to support people who will lie, connive, manipulate, do you suddenly assume that that is a good person to have in power? And also, Mr. Moore, Michael Moore, why have you not acknowledged, gone down to Honduras and acknowledged the corruption that has occurred under her State Department and her, and a coup? Since when do people on the left support coups? And in Russia, the coup, and NATO, and the bombing of Libya. Have you been to Libya? Why don't you go to Libya and talk with the people there who had the highest standard of living, the longest life expectancy, the most savings, free medical care, no crime, the most freedom for women of any Arab nation in the world, and take a look at it now. Why don't you say this was Hillary's and then the murder of Gaddafi? Then ask, are you still going to suggest that that's the kind of person that we should have in office? Something to think about. Oh, and by the way, if you don't think that the media gets its talking points from PR firms, from political action firms, and they repeat them all the time, well, I want to play a short clip, and I'm only going to play about 15 seconds of the clip. The entire 5 minutes is the same identical thing.
A child's happiness is priceless, especially on a birthday.
A child's happiness is priceless, especially on a birthday.
A child's happiness is priceless, especially on a birthday.
A child's happiness is priceless, especially on a birthday.
Well, a child's happiness is priceless, right? Especially on a birthday.
A child's happiness is priceless, especially on a birthday.
A child's happiness is priceless, especially on a birthday.
A child's happiness is priceless, especially on their birthday.
Now imagine that virtually every television station, all the different networks were saying the same identical thing. Well, then where's your reporting? Where's your independent look at a particular topic? And I just selected one comment. I could select 1,000. So anyone who trusts the media today has to be extraordinarily naive. Let's go over now and say hello to David Cobb, C-O-B-B, in California. David is an American activist and attorney. He is the campaign manager for Dr. Jill Stein's presidential run with the Green Party. He was the Green Party presidential candidate in 2004 election cycle. Nice to have you with us today, David.
Thank you, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
David, I'm going to ask you some questions. Please only state yes or no. We don't want any further understanding than that. At least it allows us to compare you and Trump and Hillary Clinton. All right? We know their views. Would, and I'm going to say you as if it were you and Jill Stein, because you're, you know, she represents what the Green Party represents. Would she reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act to again separate savings and loan banking from speculative investment banking?
Yes.
Would she ban trading in commodities that are necessary to life, such as food and oil and water?
I don't understand the question.
In other words, right now, many of the prices that we are paying for commodities are based upon them being privatized or manipulated by Wall Street brokers that don't have to buy a single barrel of oil, but they will manufacture an artificial price. Suddenly it goes from $40 a barrel to $100 a barrel, and it's just because of people profiting from the system.
Yes.
Okay. Would she ban or oppose the privatization of water in the United States?
Absolutely, yes.
Would she support a thorough investigation into the background and corporate and institutional influence of Obama's secretive Atlantic and Pacific trade partnerships?
Yes.
Would she stop the Federal Reserve from giving any more interest-free loans to banks and corporations and bring the Federal Reserve under the Treasury and print money from the Treasury at zero interest?
Yes.
Would she declare a moratorium on every home foreclosure in the United States until it's independently investigated?
Yes.
Would she forgive all student loans and interest?
Yes.
would she repeal Bush's bankruptcy law revisions that prevent student loan holders from declaring bankruptcy?
Yes.
Would she allow all corporations that cannot be maintained to go through a structured bankruptcy instead of a bailout?
Yes.
Would she ban lobbying from state and federal offices?
Yes.
Would she create a national health prevention program?
Yes.
Would she eliminate industry-tied scientists or physicians from being on advisory boards at the CDC and the FDA and the National Institutes of Health offices?
Yes.
Would she get back to a civil conservation corps to re-green America using labor and giving them a living wage in the process?
Yes.
Would she convert right now 10 million square feet of office space in New York that is owned by the city, the state, or the federal government into livable housing for those who have no home?
Probably yes.
Would she acknowledge the dangers of depleted uranium in all conflict zones that we have been in, and then go in to inform the public and begin a process of trying to clean up those environments and treat the people who are suffering from depleted uranium illnesses?
Yes.
Would she support a single-payer health coverage under Medicare for all people?
Yes.
Right? Would she try to ban all funds in campaigns? Take the money out of campaign. Would she try to repeal
publicly funded elections? Yes.
Okay, good. Would she repeal Citizens United?
Yes.
Okay. Would she do an investigation against all people who had been in office, living or dead, who had committed crimes against society, and have an independent group of jurists see whether or not they indeed commit crimes against society, so they, even if they're dead, they could still be held accountable by their reputation. If they're alive, they could be held accountable like anyone else who breaks the law.
Yes.
Would she have the courage to go in and deconstruct the 17 major intelligence agency and close down completely the National Security Agency and do an investigation of everyone who ever worked there in any policy position that engaged in illegal spying upon anyone in the world?
Mostly, yes. There would have to be qualifiers to what you just said.
Would she go in and deconstruct the CIA and hold every single CIA agent who had committed any crime, hold them guilty, hold them responsible for the crimes they've committed, and so they have to serve their time like anyone else?
Mostly, yes.
Would she decriminalize all of the current drugs in our war on drugs and replace it with centers for therapy, both psychological therapy and withdrawal therapy, to help these people, and then expunge their records so they could rebuild their life without that stigma attached?
Mostly, yes.
Would she do an investigation of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and its 28,000 laws, more or less, that it has caused to be passed in the last 30 years by, in effect, meeting with the state legislators in secret, in luxurious compounds, giving them bills, coaching them on how to take those bills back to the state and passing them as if they were their own bills, only because it helped the 250 or more of these corporations? Would she go after the American Legislative Council? Would she try to get the states to make it against the law to meet with anyone from ALEC or any other group and bring transparency and voting in the citizens' rights rather than the corporate rights to the states?
Yes.
All right. Would she go into a Marshall Program on environmental renewables, much like we did the Marshall Plan after World War II, where we built Germany and Italy and Spain and Japan? Would she do that to the environment by bringing up wave energy, geothermal energy that have not been touched at all in the United States, as well as the new turbines, which are not polluting, not killing birds, and the newest solar in the United States?
Yes.
Would she close down the nuclear facility or move to close down or de-license the aging, dangerous nuclear facility in the United States?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that gives us an idea of the difference between Hillary Clinton and and your candidate, Jill Stein, and Donald Trump, and Gary Jones, but he's somewhere else. So at least the people in this audience understand why it is so important, even in a loss. You have to look, and I said this a long time ago when I voted for Ralph Nader. I said, I'm going to vote for Ralph for a simple reason, not because I'm in any way unaware that he will lose, but because in his loss, he will have created a platform that will then be the future that we can then rally around and bring other progressive minds and create articles, documentaries, programs that we can then start to spread the message at the state level, the local level, the national level. And so the next election cycle, where others just have money and politicians and the oligarchy and corporate America behind them, we will have the people and their interests behind. And they thought that was immature, and so as a result, they wanted both the support of Al Gore and they wanted the support of what's his face, now Al Gore and John Kerry. Look at the consequences to John Kerry. Look at the consequences to Ralph Nader. Do you know any human being in American history who is a non-politician, caused over 235 of the most important protective laws in history, like the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and all these others, founded the Environmental Protection Agency. Ralph Nader did that. Why would we assume that he would not have gone forward? Would Jill Stein pick up that mantle that Ralph Nader started and carry forward all that he was supporting?
Gary, the question is really whether or not we're going to build a mass movement in this country of ordinary people putting forward a vision for a peaceful, just, democratic, and ecologically sustainable society. That's the reason that we in the Green Party and Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka are so committed to the concept of building mass movements in the streets, in the pool halls, in the bowling alleys, in the beauty salons, in the barber shops, and the laundromats across this country, and an electoral arm for those movements. Because, Gary, I know what you know and what your listeners know, and that is that unless there is a mass movement and an electoral arm, we can't make systemic transformational change. Let's remember what it took so-called third parties to champion at the ballot box in this country. The abolition of slavery, women getting the right to vote, the creation of the Social Security Administration, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation laws, pure food and drug laws, ending child labor, the direct election of the United States Senate, the 40-hour work week and the weekend. Gary, the entire fabric of what we today consider the bare minimum for a just and compassionate society was literally woven together by social movements and third-party activists. Third-party activists who did their work when they were called dangerous un-Americans, third-party activists who did their work when they were called naive and unrealistic, and third-party activists who did their work when they were called spoilers. So, Gary, today, if we want to live in a world that will end war as foreign policy, we want to live in a world that will transition away from coal and oil and nuclear power to sustainable alternative energy, if we want to live in a world that will dismantle the prison industrial complex, if we want to live in a world that will de-corporatize education systems and actually create a system where we are nurturing children to become critical thinkers to take their place as citizens in a society, if we want to live in a society that will guarantee health care as a fundamental human right, if we want to live in a society that will abolish not just the idea of money in elections, but abolish the idea of corporations having constitutional rights, you see, if we want to live in that world, Gary, we've got to be willing to build mass movements and electoral arms for those movements, vote for them at the ballot box. And I want to conclude with this. If just 5% of the American people vote for Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka, that qualifies the 2020 candidate to start with over $10 million, more money than Jill Stein or Ralph Nader spent combined, we would start with. Imagine that for a moment, the ability to hire organizers from the beginning, the ability to start with guaranteed ballot lines without having to go through the petitioning process. Gary, we are very close to 5%. If we get 5% of the vote, we will change this country. It's as simple as that.
David, I appreciate your insights. And this audience, which is the largest progressive audience listening to radio in the world, I know that many of them were thinking, well, maybe Hillary would be better. And I'm sure that Michael Moore, I'm sure you read Michael Moore's posting. I don't know. Did you read my letter to Michael Moore?
I didn't read your letter. I read Michael Moore's, and I know you, Gary. So I will go back and look at the letter, but I think I know what you basically said.
Well, yeah, you got it right. And I know Michael for a long time. So my hope is what he did to Ralph Nader, he did then to Jill Stein. And we have to realize the future is not with the neocons. The future is not with the lesser two evils. David, you were there as the candidate. Jill's there as the candidate. Ralph Nader was there as the candidate. All people have to look at who's got the right ideas that can save us. Jill Stein, you and the other Greens, they're going to stop this $1 trillion giveaway to the nuclear industry. They're not going to have, they're not going to have more wars. They're going to close down these camps that we have 900 military bases around the world. So that's what people have a choice in, and I want them to think about that. So no longer can we accept that we've only got the lesser of two evils to vote for. We've got Jill Stein, and that is the positive one. So
thank you, Gary. I also want to remind people, absolutely, yes, vote for Jill Stein or John Lou Baraka, because your vote might be the one that qualifies the Green Party for over $10 million. I also want to invite you and challenge you to vote for Green Party candidates down ballot. Vote for Greens for Congress. Vote for Greens for state legislature, for county commissioner, for city council, for soil and conservation district, for dog catcher. Right, Gary, what we've got to do, did you know that there are already over 200 Greens in elected office across the country? Did you know? And by the way, don't just vote Green, but register Green. In those states where you can register Green, we already have 300,000 registrants in this country. By the end of this election cycle, our goal is to have 500,000. Gary, this movement is actually getting larger, stronger, and better organized. But most people don't know it because the corporate media is at best ignoring us. At worst, they are attempting to create the spectacle and the narrative that we don't exist, or that we're foolish, or that we don't have a plan. But we do, as you said, actually have a program and a plan. The Green New Deal is actually based on science and technology that actually can transition us into a new world. And at the end of the day, 5% of the vote guarantees us that money. But here's the other thing. Literally, Gary, I tell you, if 10 to 15% or when 10 to 15% of the people vote for the Green Party program and platform, you will now have a ability to implement, regardless of who is in Congress and regardless of who is in the White House, we will implement a single-payer health care program. You will implement a campaign and an ability to actually begin to to create new energy production based on a sustainable alternative energy. Because at the end of the day, it is the culture shift that the Green Party represents that the ruling elite is so terrified of. And I will conclude with this, Gary. The ruling elite, and I mean not just the 1%, but as you well know, the 0.001%, the true billionaire class, I'm not angry at them, Gary. I actually feel sorry for them. I think that they are mentally ill. They are addicted to the concentration of wealth, power, and decision-making authority. And like every other addict, all they can think about is more wealth, more power, more decision-making authority. I submit this. The Green Party is a peaceful, loving, nonviolent intervention culturally and politically in this country. We've got to actually get these people the help that they need, because they are literally destroying the planet that they and their children and grandchildren depend upon for life itself. So I step into this conversation with love, with a fierce determination that we need to intervene, because they are destroying the planet and they must be stopped.
David Cobb, thank you very much. And I think the people in this audience at least got the message. Appreciate you being out there.
Thank you, Gary, and thanks for what you do.
David Cobb, who is the campaign manager for Dr. Jill Stein, and he was the former Green Party presidential candidate. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on the next program. Have a nice day.
All the praise belongs to God. Here we go.